Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, March the 7th. In the wake of the revelations about the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, a U.S. Senate panel is looking into the entire military healthcare system. It will hear from officers in charge of healthcare operations at the different services. Lawmakers from both parties have expressed concerns that the problems of mold and rat-infested conditions at Walter Reed are just the tip of the iceberg. Army officials yesterday announced that teams of inspectors will visit 11 bases in 7 states. They will study outpatient care, building conditions, and the information provided to patients. And at the White House today, President Bush is scheduled to meet with former Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole and former Health and Human Services Secretary, also former Chancellor at UW-Madison, Donna Shalala. The president named them yesterday to lead a bipartisan panel investigating the problem into the mistreatment of wounded troops. We will talk about how the administration is handling this scandal that was brought to everyone's attention by a series of reports in the Washington Post recently. We'll wonder whether more heads should roll. A couple have already. We'll do that during this first segment of the hour. And then after 7:30, we're going to focus on another issue in the news, the guilty verdicts in the Lewis Scooter Libby trial. And what that might lead to. We'll talk about that after 7:30. We are happy to have with us a guest to talk about both of these issues, Dale Hirspring, professor of political science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat and naval officer, the author of several books, including The Pentagon and the Presidency, and the forthcoming Arrogance of Power, Donald Rumsfeld and the American Military. Professor Hirspring, good morning.
Good morning to you.
And thanks again for agreeing to talk about both of these issues. But let's start with the Walter Reed scandal, I guess, for lack of a better term. What was your reaction when this first came to light in the Washington Post reports?
Well, my reaction was that it's been going on for 30, 40 years. Military medicine has never received the attention it's supposed to have received from the military or from the ill. And thank God, finally, something is forcing the country to pay attention to the whole problem. I mean, I'm not suggesting that some of the outpatient things was everywhere, but I mean, I can remember back when I was in the dark ages, when I was enlisted, there were problems with it because the military can't afford enough physicians. And what happens is in the procurement process is money comes in and the Navy buys ships, the Army buys tanks, and the Air Force buys airplanes. And, oh, by the way, we also have those medical people back there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're sort of at the end of the line. And I'm just glad to see, and I have a lot of respect for Dole, and I think Shalala, with her background, to see that somebody is going to sit down and say, look, this is not a partisan issue. This is an issue of how we're going to treat soldiers, Marines, sailors, airmen. We're going to treat them right, and let's get this whole thing turned upside down.
Yeah, so you agree with those who say that this is just the tip of the iceberg? What we know about the conditions at Walter Reed is...
Well, yeah, exactly, because what's happened is we've had a geometrical increase, a tremendous increase in the number of GIs and ISIS who are need of these services, and more or less the same number of people with a slight increase are still trying to serve them. You can't have this many people coming in, and all of a sudden you have to expand, and you don't. You just can't go down the street and hire 5 more doctors or 5 more nurses or 5 more social workers. It takes a while to get these people and get them in and get them trained. For the military is different from the civilian world. What they're entitled to is different. And I think a lot of it's got to do with the expansion because of the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, and the fact that there's just not the money there has not been there in the past to take care of it.
Yeah. So how do you think the administration is handling this with, we saw 2 people lose their jobs over this?
I think, frankly, as you pointed out, I'm doing a book on Rumsfeld. I am very pleased to see the way Bob Gates has handled this. And I point out the number of Democratic senators have also made the same comment I'm making. He jumped on it, heads flew, and he made it very clear that this is just not going to be put up with, as opposed to, well, we're going to look into it and we'll get back to you next month. Gates moved very quickly and said this was absolutely unacceptable, and that's why the Secretary of the Army's gone. That's why now we've got two other generals who are out of the middle of things, physician generals. One, I think, was a bit of a sacrificial lamb, but the other one needed to go.
Yeah. Are you talking about Waitman?
Waitman, I think he was a bit of a sacrificial lamb.
He was only on the job for like 6 months or something, right?
He'd only been there 6 months, and apparently, just based upon media reports, he'd actually been trying to do some things, and is very highly respected by all the people there. And the thing that's important about him is, from a military standpoint, he accepted responsibility. This is sort of the military's attitude is, if you do well, you get a medal. If you don't, you accept responsibility.
Yeah, I was just, this other guy sitting next to him as they're testifying on Monday, I'm sorry, I can't find his name. Yeah, I mean, he was not accepting responsibility.
No, and I think that's not a very, I've met both kinds of people. I prefer the Waitman kind a whole lot more, because that kind of person inspires confidence in him in among his subordinates, because he'll take and stand up and take it. And Kylie says, no, I was all my subordinates. Well, I mean, that's not the first time that's happened, but it's certainly not what the military expects from people. If your ship runs aground and you're the captain of the ship, you're responsible. Doesn't matter who did it, whether they were negligent or not, you're in charge. And I think Waitman took responsibility and he did the right thing. It's unfortunate, because I think that he does everything I can see, and I don't know the man. It seems that he's been trying to rectify some of the problems, but the problem is, as all the GIs have said, is much bigger than just Walter Reed. And so I think that he becomes sort of a sideshow, and the real show is, what are Shalala and Dole going to do? And frankly, I would not want to face Bob Dole if I were running an insufficient medical operation. Because he's been there, done that, and he knows exactly what these guys are going through.
We're talking with Dale Hirschspring. He's a professor of political science at Kansas State University, talking in this first half of the program about the congressional hearings that have begun, looking into the scandal at the Walter Reed Medical Center and panel that will be looking into the entire veterans medical system. We welcome your thoughts and questions about this. Is this the tip of the iceberg? Do you have any personal experience that you might want to talk about? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. 263-1890. 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, March the 7th. We're talking about the fallout from the Walter Reed scandal, the hearings going on right now, the investigations that are going to start looking into problems within the entire military medical system. Our guest is Dale Hirschspring, professor of political science at Kansas State University. And let me ask you about this before we go to the phones, Professor Hirschspring. Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer is quoted in the news today saying that the troubles at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center are the Katrina of 2007.
I think that's exaggeration. First of all, Chuck Schumer's job is to basically raise complaints and nail the Republicans. So this is heavily political. I think this is a problem that has been much, much more ongoing. You could probably, if you do the same thing, and nail the Clinton administration for a lot of the problems in military medicine. And I think that, frankly, today, for example, just looking through the media, I think the Libby thing has almost blown it off the newspapers. In fact, some papers I can't even find a mention of it because it's all focused elsewhere. So
one of the reasons why we asked, too, that it is because it is a breaking story, and sometimes that happens. We're going to talk to you about that after 7.
I know, but I'm just saying, I think that's blown this almost off of the news, and Schumer's doing his job, but I mean, I think he's also pushing a little hard on something that I think is really not a Democrat or a Republican problem. It is a problem simply of let's fix military medicine, period.
You know, this is a report on NBC, and I don't have all the details on it, and you may not have even seen it, but the reason I bring it up is Katrina comes up in this, in that the I guess it was the Veterans Affairs Administration hired, or well, I don't know if it was the Army, hired a private company to work on maintenance of Walter Reed, and it turns out it was a company that did some relief work in during Hurricane Katrina and was accused of being really bad at its hurricane relief efforts. And here the same company is in charge of fixing up Walter Reed.
Well, that assumes that in the U.S. government, one hand knows what the other hand's doing.
Mm-hmm.
My own 20 experience, over 20 years plus experience, is that often happened. And it's because one person didn't know what the other person had done. There should be some sort of a alert list of these people have really, you know, have been found guilty of misusing funds and so forth, and that should be available to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it exists. It's never existed. Oftentimes you do things like this, and I've seen it done in other administrations. You're embarrassed. Well, people made the deal, didn't have any idea that this exists happened.
Yeah, lots of callers. Ralph in West Bend, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm a retired medical officer, and I want to make two points. With Rumsfeld and the Bush administration, the Army Medical Corps had a great de-emphasis of both specialty training and university affiliation. And this has weakened the medical corps. I really think we should select our surgeon generals of the Army, who perhaps are even reserve officers, from the university ranks. The second point is that several months ago, the rumor was floated or put out that Walter Reed would be moving to Bethesda. And that, I think, puts a morale damper on the whole hospital. Walter Reed could be a wonderful thing for that depressed neighborhood of North Washington, D.C., the same way that Marquette University is enhancing the neighborhood in Milwaukee. This has not happened, and unfortunately, the neighborhood has deteriorated Walter Reed. Those are my comments.
Now, do you have a reaction, Professor Hirschsprung?
Well, I appreciate the fact that he brought up the Bethesda, because I think part of the reason why there hasn't been as much money put in is if you know one place is going to close and go into another place, then you can't get you're getting blood out of a turnip to try and get anybody to give you money to fix it up. I don't know if that's the explanation. He raises some interesting questions. Certainly, he's been there. He knows the situation far better than I do from up front. I'm not sure it's wise to bring somebody in from the outside. Both of these senior officers are West Point graduates. Both of them then went on to medical school. I think most people in the military would prefer not to bring a civilian in from the outside, but I guess that's an individual choice.
Yeah, thank you, Ralph. Jerry in Genesee Depot. Hi, Jerry.
Same old story. Heads will roll. Where? Right into some other job of equal pay, equal benefits, equal everything else. Probably the trouble lies maybe even four levels down from the top. Certainly you would think that any medical personnel would realize that conditions were bad and could somehow or another call their congressman. The whole gang is in this rotten thing together. It is a shame when you think the thousands of dollars that we're spending to put more people into the hospitals, and here they are not even getting reasonable care, but it doesn't seem like anybody hollered very much. But it still makes me laugh. Now, whether there will be a change or not, I don't know. Whether there's competition, competitive bidding on anything or how it works, but it doesn't look like it's very good treatment. So let them go ahead and do what they're going to do. But I don't think I'm going to see much. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. First of all, Professor Hirschsprung, are these guys who were fired just going to go into some other job?
Basically, when that happens in the military, your career is over. So, I mean, they're physicians. Obviously, they'll go outside of the military and make a decent amount of money. And, yes, there were clearly cases of insufficiency going on. This sort of reminds me of Karpinski with the Abu Ghraib thing. She said, well, I didn't know this was happening down, you know, these atrocities were happening. And what was her command? And she's in charge. She's in charge of everything. And if these guys are in charge, they're in charge of everything. I would ask the question if the physicians, because the three-star, Kylie, he had been in charge of Bethesda, Walter Reed before. Why hadn't the problems been addressed then? Why did it only when Reitman came in? Head's role, they already have. Will this be enough to fix the problem? I don't know. That's really going to depend a lot on Shalala and Dole, and I commend the administration for immediately getting those two out because I think they have credibility.
Yeah. Thank you, Jerry. Mark in Milwaukee. Hello, Mark.
Good morning. I'm a disabled vet of the Vietnam War. I had my right hip mostly blown off. I had really good care at Bethesda, Maryland for 5 months. And then I was transferred to a VA hospital in Des Moines, Iowa, where I'd be closer to home. When I got, before I left Bethesda, the surgeons told me that I was to have no more surgery for at least 2 years because of a very serious bone infection. It's a bacterial infection called osteomyelitis. I wasn't in that VA hospital in Des Moines for more than a half an hour in my bed before a doctor came to my bedside with my records, and he told me that he was scheduling me for a hip replacement, which is something that could have killed me. And I, thank goodness, had been a corpsman in Vietnam, and I knew about osteomyelitis, and I knew how serious it was, and I told this surgeon that he's absolutely not going to do surgery on me. And thank goodness it didn't happen. But I spent 2 months at the VA hospital in Des Moines. And in those 2 months, after talking to many of the wounded soldiers that were in there, this place was the VA was a place where these new doctors were performing surgeries that were unnecessary. I got the strong feeling that they were doing this because they knew if they had these surgeries under their belt, they'd make a lot of money when they got out of the VA hospital.
Mark, I hate to cut your story short, and I appreciate you sharing it with us, but we only have a minute before the news break. Professor Hirschspring, do you think that kind of stuff is widespread?
I think you hit it on the head. The problem is not just military medicine. It's the VA hospital network, and something has got to be done. Forget political party affiliation. Something's got to be done to bring those things up to snuff because they are not being treated right. We have not treated the vets right and not treated the VA hospitals right as a country.
Yeah. You have hopes that Senator Dole and Donna Shalala will get to the bottom of this?
I have hopes. Mm-hmm. I mean, am I skeptical? Yeah, I've been around Washington, too many years around Washington. I'm always skeptical. But I have hopes that they will. I think this whole thing, we may start seeing things just coming out in all directions.
Yeah. Well, we'll continue to follow this. We're going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. And then we're going to talk about the conviction of former vice presidential aide Louis Libby. The verdict's in yesterday, guilty on 4 of the 5 charges against him for lying in the investigation of the CIA leak case. We'll talk about the political implications of the Libby verdicts coming up after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Wednesday morning, March the 7th. The White House and the prosecutor in the CIA leak case are expressing different kinds of sadness after the conviction of Louis Libby yesterday. A White House spokesperson says President Bush is saddened for the former White House aide and for his family. Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, who led the leak investigation, says it's sad that a high-level official obstructed justice and lied under oath. Libby's lawyer called the verdict disappointing, but says he's seeking a new trial and believes Libby will be vindicated. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid welcomed the verdict. The Nevada Democrat says it's about time someone in the Bush administration is held accountable for what he called a campaign to manipulate intelligence and discredit war critics. Reid also said the president should promise not to pardon Louis Libby. And as we heard in NPR News, a spokesperson says that there would be no comment on a wildly hypothetical situation like that. Libby is the highest-ranking White House official to be convicted of a felony since the Iran-Contra scandal. We'll talk about the verdicts and the political fallout in this segment of the program with our guest professor, Dale Hirschspring. And we welcome your questions and your reactions as well. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. You can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Professor Hirschspring is a professor of political science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat and naval officer, author of several books, including the forthcoming Arrogance of Power, Donald Rumsfeld, and the American Military. And Professor Hirschspring, okay, what was your reaction to the Louis Libby verdicts yesterday?
Well, I must be honest and say I was surprised. In fact, most of my friends, colleagues were surprised that it came out that way. It's sad. That's the way politics are played in Washington. And by my experience, by both parties, he got caught. And the downside is it makes the Bush administration look worse. The upside is the Republicans, there's nobody from the Bush administration running for office. So I would expect McCain and Giuliani and the others to simply denounce Libby that he broke the law and this is what happened to him. How much of an effect it'll have on the upcoming election, I really am not willing. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can say it this time because it's not clear. They've nailed the Bush administration with it politically, if that's what you're asking about, but they haven't nailed Republicans in general with it.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. The headline in our Wisconsin State Journal this morning, "A Bad Day for Bush and Cheney Decision Does Great Damage to the Administration." Do you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it does. It's just sort of one more nail in the coffin. I don't think it's anywhere. It's a bit of a sidelight because right now everything's focused on Iraq. Were the Iraq not going on, it would be a much bigger event than I think it is. But it's just another sort of nail in the coffin when you know sort of the reaction is, well, what do you expect? But I don't think it's hurt the Republicans very bad, but I think it's hurt this administration, and everybody's going to pile on now, as both parties do in this kind of a situation.
Yeah, so do you think there could be, I've heard some calling for Congress to do something to hold, say, Vice President Dick Cheney accountable or someone higher up in the food chain than Louis Libby?
Well, I think there'll be calls for it. I'm not certain anything's going to happen. There's no question that there'll be calls for it because this is, and if you're a Democrat now, this is the time to pile on, just as if it was when it was Bush. I mean, when Clinton had his problem, the Republicans piled on, and this is what both parties do. Washington politics are very nasty. I've seen some of these kinds of things that never even come to light happen, and I've seen them done by both parties. You want to get out of line, we'll fix you real quick. Now, the one other thing that's worth pointing out is one of the things I've learned in writing this new book is that Cheney's influence is way down compared to what it was, let's say, in 2001, 2002, 2003, in that period. Changes. I mean, for example, the recent agreement on North Korea, that was done between Condi and the president, and Cheney was circumvented. And that's how she got the agreement, because he would have argued against it all the way down the line. But she got it by just calling up the president and saying, this is what I have. And the president said, go with it. And Cheney reads about it in the newspaper. So I don't think his influence is all that significant now anyway, so hurting him is not going to hurt much of anything.
Yeah. Let's listen to a clip from, this was one of the jurors, Dennis Collins, I believe his name was, and mm-hmm. he He was commenting on how the jury reached its decision, and I think this is the clip where he wonders if Louis Libby was the fall guy.
It was said a number of times, what are we doing with this guy here? Where's Rove? Where's, you know, where are these other guys? We're not saying that we didn't think Mr. Libby was guilty of the things we found him guilty of, but that it seemed like he was, to put it Mr. Wells' point, but he was the fall guy.
Yeah, so was he the fall guy?
Well, I think it certainly, it sounds like it for both sides. It was the fall guy from the Republicans, and it was the only one the Democrats could get something on. Yeah, but, I mean, the sort of thing is, that's just not that unusual in Washington. You go after, if it's the other guys are in power, you go after whoever you can get. And he was, he's the one that they could get. And the hope, of course, is now that they'll embarrass the entire administration. But that's just, I mean, that's just politics as usual, to be honest with you.
Yeah. The you know, politics as usual, I wonder, Professor Hirschspring, is it politics as usual for the vice president to tell his aide to try to smear, you know, the reputation of somebody who's a critic of the administration, Joe Wilson, and in the process out a CIA agent, his wife?
Well, first of all, I mean, I don't think anybody seriously believes his wife was outed because she was already in basically a, I mean, that takes too long to go through, go into that. But she was not in what we call an operational status overseas, or involved in that kind of thing. It was Army teachers basically who did it, not there. But the two things: one, first of all, this is the first vice president since before FDR who has played this kind of a role. Every other vice president, Gore, all the others, basically the president ran things; they stayed in the background. So this is the first time we've had a vice president doing that. If what you're asking, is it normal in Washington for somebody in authority to try and nail people who are considered threats to the administration, absolutely. You know, you do that. This happens all the time, regardless of party. Every party has a hitman, and you'll go out and maybe this is perhaps more extreme than some, but I think what it shows that in the end is nobody was really out to get him the way he claims, because it was Armitage who leaked it, and Armitage wasn't out to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Louis Libby was not found guilty of leaking her name, but
lying about it to the FBI and lying to a grand jury. But so, I mean, I think we have to be careful. It is not the actual issue of outing his wife. The real issue is, you know, lying to a federal grand jury or to an FBI agent. And that's different from what's here, because if the person who's really guilty of outing her is Armitage.
Yeah, but didn't it come out in the testimony, at least, that the vice president did write on, for instance, Joe Wilson's critical column, you know, doesn't his wife work at the CIA? And didn't it come out in the testimony that he did want Louis Libby to at least spread the word about this to members of the press?
Could be. I did not see that. I can't comment on it other than the fact that it would not surprise me in the least.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least if Karl Rove said the same thing. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if somebody on the Hill said the same thing. It's just a tough town. It really is. And you have to expect those kind of, if you're going to take on the administration, whichever administration, going to go jump on Clinton for his actions, you've got to be prepared that somebody's going to come after you with a hatchet, because they're going to try and undercut you, destroy your credibility. I mean, that's just the way politics is played.
Yeah. Vice President Cheney, by the way, says he is very disappointed with the conviction of his former chief of staff in the CIA leak trial, Louis Libby, convicted yesterday of lying and obstructing an investigation into how CIA operative Valerie Plame's name was leaked to reporters. In a statement, Cheney said, Libby has served our nation tirelessly and with great distinction. He adds he doesn't plan to comment any more about the case because Libby plans to ask for a new trial and potentially file an appeal. We welcome your questions and your thoughts about the guilty verdicts in the Louis Libby trial and the implications, the political implications of these verdicts. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, I'll talk with David Horowitz. He's out with a new book called Indoctrination U, The Left's War Against Academic Freedom. So we'll talk about those liberal college campuses and whether they're indoctrinating students coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking about the guilty verdicts in the Louis Libby trial yesterday. He was convicted yesterday of 4 out of 5 counts of perjury, lying, obstructing an investigation into how the CIA agent's name, Valerie Plame's name, was leaked to reporters. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Welcoming your reactions to these verdicts and your questions for our guest, Dale Hirschspring, professor of political science at Kansas State University. What about, and I'm going to go to the phones in just a moment, Professor Hirschspring, but what about the call right away from Senator Harry Reid saying the president should pledge not to pardon Libby and the White House response that it's too early to comment on something so hypothetical?
Well, first of all, I think eventually it'll probably happen. And Reid is trying to make to gain political points from it. What the White House though has a perfect cover, because obviously the president should not be commenting on any case that is being appealed or is still in the courts. He should not make any comment until after Libby has been already sentenced. My assumption is it'll probably he will probably pardon him after the election takes place next year.
Now, why do you think that?
Because that's just the way that the system can operate. He doesn't want to do anything before the election that's going to hurt the Republican cause, or if he can find a way to do it that is sort of obtrusive. But you don't take somebody who's worked that hard for your administration. If you can help him, you do. Clinton did the same thing when it came to granting pardons to people just before he left. I mean, he signed about 12 of them just before he went up to the mm-hmm. Hill to see Bush be sworn in.
Yeah. Yeah. Libby's sentencing has been scheduled for June 5th.
Right.
He could face up to 25 years, but a much lighter sentence is likely, plus he's out as he appeals.
Right. And the appeal may put the June 5th thing off anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's up to the courts.
Steve in Eau Claire is with us. Hi, Steve.
Hi, I'm calling him. I'm also an academic who teaches political science here in Wisconsin. But I also happened to spend some time at Langley many years ago. And I thought I'd shed some light on this situation people don't talk about, or at least not since I've tuned in. In the entrance of Langley, there's a wall of stars with no names. The reason there's no names is even if a CIA officer has been dead for many years and not working actively, their name is revealed. All their contacts and all their networks in many of these hostile regimes, people are killed, families die, sometimes other American agents die. I would bet since Valerie Plame has been outed, she had contacts and networks in Africa and the Middle East and was working on the Iranian nuclear capability. Somebody has died. The word isn't crime or obstruction. Whoever was behind this, the word is treason. Let's be serious about this. You out someone, other people pay the cost, a steep cost, and somehow everybody's been dancing around this really serious issue.
Yeah, Louis Libby wasn't convicted of that, though.
Of course not, but that's the underlying sort of 800-pound gorilla in the whole China shop about this whole thing.
Yeah. And the special prosecutor, Fitzgerald, Professor Hirschspring, did say in the, he said it before and he said it again yesterday, that there was no doubt that Plame's name at the time was classified and she was outed, not by Louis Libby, but was outed.
Well, he's absolutely right. I've seen that wall many, many times as well. And been in there so many times. In fact, I was just there last summer giving briefings. But, and he's right. What Army Teach said is that when he said it, he thought it was already out. Well, whether he did or not, that's be taken up with him. And he's also right that when these kind of things happen, it's not so much her that is hurt. It's if wherever she was, wherever she worked, wherever she was an operative, anybody she had contact with now comes into question as to what they were doing, and they can well be taken down. That's certainly my experience has been mostly with the former Soviet Union or with Russia, and that was a nice way to get people killed real fast.
Does this verdict, did this whole trial, this whole investigation, did this tell us, Professor Hirschspring, that this administration knew that Iraq was not trying to buy yellow cake from Niger and was manipulating that intelligence to convince us and Congress that we needed to go to war with Iraq.
The stuff on the yellow cake and Niger should never have been left in. The reason it was left in is the Brits still to this day claim it, in fact, the report's true. The report didn't come from us. It came from the Brits, from British MI5. And that's how it got in. Everybody has apologized for having put it in. Condi's apologized. The president's apologized. It shouldn't have been in. In fact, I could go through all of the proofs that they put in, and most of them have been discredited. I to this day think a lot of it was actually believed, but that report came from the Brits, and I think that we left it in because since we have a special relationship with the Brits in the intel field, it's very difficult to say something from the Brits that they hold strongly to that we shouldn't hold strongly to.
Yeah. Helen in DeForest is with us now. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I just wanted to add to a couple of points your previous callers made, which is Valerie Plame was definitely covert, and just because she wasn't out in the field overseas doesn't mean she wasn't doing important secret business. My understanding is that she was working on weapons of mass destruction, particularly in Iran and Iraq, so it was incredibly relevant what she was doing. And then also, not only was she outed, but the entire organization that she worked for, Brewster and Jennings, which was a CIA cover organization, that entire organization was outed, damaging the credibility and the safety of untold number of agents that ever worked for that agency. So I think it was incredibly damaging. That was one point I wanted to make.
Yeah. All right.
I agree. I'm not arguing with the fact with you. I have been in embassies abroad as a Foreign Service officer with CIA people under who were there undercover. It takes years to set up these kinds of things, and they can be destroyed easily. What my experience has been is that when you get highly political people in an administration, they don't really pay much attention to that. Their concern is the president being attacked, is the president being threatened, will respond. And to sit back and say, well, gee, if you do it, you're putting people's lives at stake. They never get to that point.
Let me play a cut from Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, who led the leak investigation and said this after the guilty verdicts were delivered yesterday.
Obviously, we are gratified by the jury's verdict today. The jury worked very long and hard and deliberated at some length over the charges and returned a verdict of guilty on four of the counts. The jury was obviously convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant had lied and obstructed justice in a serious matter. The results are actually sad. It's sad that we had a situation where a high-level official, a person who worked in the office of vice president, obstructed justice and lied under oath. We wish that it had not happened, but it did.
And I played that in part, Professor Hirschspring, because we did have a caller who didn't want to hold and talk on the air, but he thought that Fitzgerald didn't have to prosecute this at all. This wasn't that big a deal, and wants you to talk about that.
He's right. He didn't have to prosecute it. I don't know anything about him other than the news have been speculating he's a Republican, and in that case, you sort of wonder, well, you know, he obviously must have been convinced he's doing it. Maybe he's doing it, as a lot of lawyers do, to move up the food chain, you know, because you get publicity and you get attention for having done this sort of thing. The really difficult thing to get through in Washington, and I've seen it with every administration that I worked for, is there is this sort of attempt to protect the president from everything. And I wish that you could take some of the political appointees, when they come in, for whatever administration comes in, take them out to Langley and really scrub their heads as to what they're up against and what they're doing. Now, I think Armitage, his revelation of this whole thing was a simple mistake. He didn't realize that it was a big secret. But in any case, it would really be useful, and I don't care about their party, but to really take them out and show them pictures of people who have been shot because of people shooting their mouths off. I don't think it's going to have a big effect because you cannot believe when you get around the White House and you're dealing with people who are highly political, everything is protect the president, protect the president.
Yeah. And finally, we got an email from Scott in Menasha. This was sort of a carryover from the last half hour, but let me share because it relates to this one too. With all the problems with the war intelligence, the false war, as he puts it, New Orleans, the borders, the hospitals who can't take care of the wounded. Why isn't the president's head rolling, or the vice president, or will it?
Because we have a special procedure that you elect them every 4 years. That's when their heads roll. And just like people said the same thing about Bill Clinton when he was having all of his scandals, why doesn't he just basically, in fact, they did impeach him, except there was no, was not carried out in terms of the vote in the Senate. And you have that option, but in fact, your chance to do that will come in 2008.
Yeah. And very quickly, we're almost out of time. Mike in Madison. Hi, go ahead.
Perjury is a really big deal. I'm a lawyer. Perjury strikes at the very heart of our justice system. That's why Fitzgerald prosecuted. We should not be minimizing this or making light of it. And if the president pardons this man, then what the message you're sending is that you can commit perjury, you can pervert our justice system. Don't worry, you'll get a slap on the wrist and we'll give you a bye.
Thank you, Mike. And in less than 30 seconds, Professor Hirschsprung?
That's exactly what the prosecutor said. Mike's right. Perjury does go to the heart of the system. And will it always be prosecuted to the same extent? No, it won't, because political factors inevitably get involved in whether you do something or don't do something.
Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Dale Hirschsprung, professor of political science at Kansas State University. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. And thank you for listening and calling in. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.